The Waiting for Next Year.com podcast, Hard Knocks, episode 5.
I promised you I wasn't going to sing.
But I will remember you.
Saddest episode of the year.
And it was funny, right? Let's go straight there. They did the double switch on us. Where we all knew that Nate Orchard was cut first. They did the fake out where Carl Nassib picks up his phone and they make you think that he's getting that phone call. And I was going, wait a minute, that's not... And then he puts the phone down and Nate Orchard picks up.
Yeah, Nassib wasn't cut until Saturday, right?
He wasn't cut until Saturday, and they didn't even mention which player replaced him, I don't think.
Yeah, no, they didn't mention any of the new players. Man, but though they set... It was brutal, because the way they framed the whole first half of the episode... Now, from your perspective, if you're a national viewer of Hard Knocks, we're Browns fans, we knew... Carl Nassib got cut. We knew Nate Orchard got cut. We knew Brogan Roback got cut. We knew Kajust got cut. We're Browns fans. You're a guy that lives in Nevada. You've been watching Hard Knocks. Did you check Friday to see if Kajust got cut, or are you just waiting for the next episode?
I think the casual NFL fan probably missed most of these things.
I did see some of my feed, like my Google News feed said, Hard Knock star Devin Kajust cut. So yeah. I don't know. But to me, the whole first half of the episode was this brutal setup, like in Titanic, like every little thing. They're showing literally, and this is harsh, but this is literally the peak of Brogan Roback's NFL career was that amazing touchdown pass he threw in the fourth quarter of the fourth preseason game between the Browns and the Lions. That's the peak of his NFL career. They showed how happy he was, how happy his girlfriend was. The thing that was brutal to me was we all knew Brogan Roback was going to get cut.
Yep.
But to see the other guys on the team, the stars of the team, come up and pat him on the helmet, shake his hand, give him a high five. The same with Kajust. To see David Njoku come up. Like, that's the brutal part to me, is the other guys actually liked those guys.
All right, hot take?
Yeah.
We just wasted all of our time. We know nothing about the Browns, and we just watched a TV show about a bunch of people who are not Browns and will never be Browns again.
That's true.
Like, we just spent 5 weeks getting to know Devin Kajust, Nate Orchard, Carl Nassib, Brogan Roback.
No, it's like you're an NBA reporter and you embedded yourself with the 2016 Golden State Warriors thinking this team's the best. They're going to make it to the championship. And you ride with them the whole way and you ride with them through this amazing season. And then the Cavs beat them in the last game. And you're like, well, shit. My book is ruined. No, so, you're right. We, other than coaches.
So overall, I got to say, even as a Browns fan and because it was about the Browns, I think that this show, for me, kind of peaked in episode 1, maybe episode 2, and it's been all downhill over these last 3 episodes.
Yeah.
Even the insider trading story.
That was
like, eh. Like, I just...
Well, because they cut him.
Well, and let's
like
be honest,
it was a non-story.
I don't even think that story is that big of a deal, to be honest with you. I don't think the Browns look all that stupid.
No, because they cut his ass.
Well, and on top, but they knew something, and that guy didn't tell them everything.
Yeah, that's what their statement said. He told us one thing. The facts that came out today showed that wasn't true, so we're moving on.
Yeah, and I don't think that makes them look particularly stupid. Some people thought it was like same old Browns and they look dumb. And I will admit it's like, it feels like only this could happen to the Browns.
Right.
But I don't particularly see any blood on their hands over it.
No. The Antonio Callaway stuff?
Yes.
Drifted
that's
away.
Their fault. But that's their fault.
But it also, poof. We haven't thought about that in 5 weeks. The Corey Coleman stuff, poof. Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Especially in hitching your wagons to the personalities they did. As of Friday, we thought, okay, Carl Nassib has won the defensive end battle. And you think, okay, this will be the feel-good story that Carl Nassib's still in town. And then we find some guy on the Ravens that we like better, so he's not. So, yeah, there were no kind of ending people that we were left with.
And how much does that speak to the lack of importance regarding game planning and scheming and learning a defense in the NFL? If the Browns could spend their entire training camp with guys like Nate Orchard and Carl Nassib, and then all of a sudden just swap them out, and Jamie Meter too, and swap them out and not feel too badly about it. But meanwhile, it was Ben Axelrod. I was talking to him about who gives the Browns the best chance to win. And I said, for at least the first 2 or 3 weeks, you have to think it's Tyrod Taylor, because for 5 years, he has seen NFL defenses.
Right.
He's made adjustments at the line of scrimmage. He's seen what, you know, when the safety moves over this way and the linebacker moves over this way. These are the things that you can't just discount.
Right.
And maybe it's only 2 or 3 weeks of advantage for Tyrod Taylor over over Baker Mayfield.
Bocker.
Bocker Mayfield. But he legitimately has those advantages.
No, yeah, you're right.
But meanwhile, on the defensive line, apparently, Jamie Meter, Carl Nassib, and Nate Orchard have no meaningful advantage over this dude from the Ravens.
Right. Good thing to say for the Browns overall talent-wise, and now we're just doing a Browns podcast, Nassib picked up, claimed by the Bucks.
Because Hard Knocks, the whole thing about Hard Knocks is these guys get cut.
Yeah, yeah.
That's every season of Hard Knocks.
But I know Orchard cleared waivers and was going to visit the Jets and the Bills. I don't know if he's signed with any of them
Nassib yet. Signed with Tampa.
Yeah, Nassib got picked up on waivers, so that was good. You know what? I don't know if you've ever had an interview like this. I know I have not. But Nassib's exit interview with Hugh Jackson made me like him even more. Like, Orchard, and none of their interviews made me sad. But, like, I mean, they all did in their own way. But, like, Kajust saying, well, it's God's plan, I'm going to just stay positive and blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. See you later. Grab your rocks. But Carl Nassib, thank you, sir. This has been great. I really enjoyed it. I know this is the business, and just being an absolute professional.
Yeah.
At the end.
But I thought he was almost out of character for him, and I thought maybe he was mad.
Well, at one point he said, fuck, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think he was kind of salty. I thought Nate Orchard was more grateful and thankful.
Yeah.
But I thought and that's maybe that has something to do with the cameras.
Yeah.
Although Corey Coleman didn't care about the cameras.
He kind of forgot.
I don't know that he forgot. He just did not care.
Yeah.
But, and certainly when you're Brogan Roback, he did everything that he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
It was always a numbers game. He was never supposed to make this team.
Yeah.
And he knew that he was in there just for training and learning and experience.
I don't know what a guy like that does now.
I don't either.
Like, and Kajust,
I would have thought practice squad.
Me too. But I guess with Stanton on the roster, a lot of teams are only keeping 2 quarterbacks on their active roster. We're keeping 3.
Although Stanton's going to be inactive every Sunday.
Right. So but he's probably just going to run the practice squad or the scout team.
47 are active on game day. They leave 6, mm-hmm. I think. Something like that.
But yeah, it's... He'll be inactive, but he's on the active roster.
Yes.
But yeah, I would have thought you get 10 guys on the practice squad plus your 1 international practice squad, which is weird. But what does a guy like Roback do? Like,
I think he tries to find somebody else's practice squad.
Yeah.
I think that's really...
He did show himself in that 4th preseason game.
And unlike Kajust, he is still super young.
Yeah.
Super young. And Nate Orchard is not super young.
No.
Nate Orchard was a grown-ass man when he was drafted, practically.
Right.
He was, what, 22 instead of 20? And
right.
You know, I know that doesn't sound old, especially to crusty people like us.
Right.
But you know, now Orchard is, what, 25, going on 26, which is really like middle age in the NFL.
Well, especially as you saw how interchangeable a defensive end is.
Yes.
Or an outside linebacker.
Or 2 of them.
Their job is to rush the passer, and that apparently is pretty easy. There's probably a couple of things they need to know, and so just like a punter.
It's pretty easy from an X's and O's standpoint.
Right. Yeah.
I got you.
But you could, it's like a center fielder in baseball. You can plug a new guy in and he can play tomorrow.
Yes.
So it's like, why not pay the 22-year-old guy who's got better physical tools probably than the salary of a 4-year NFL vet is higher than a rookie. So that's a tough numbers game for guys like them.
Were there any surprises for you? I got to say the highlight of this episode for me was, again, Todd Haley making fun of Kajus rocks.
Yes, I wish we would have, like Baker Mayfield saying, hold on to the ball like it's one of your rocks, was the highlight of the episode. There was something I meant to remember. Brogan Roback telling the ref, I appreciate you, bro.
He said, I appreciate you a lot.
But to the ref is my favorite. Haley making a lot of comments about Kajust rocks. It was, other than the cuts, the first half, the preseason game, like showing Nate Orchard's interception return for a touchdown, that's an amazing play, wasn't enough to make the team, but it's like, we all knew that already. It's just kind of tough to...
Well, and that's the idea. We know that anybody who's playing significant amounts of time in the fourth preseason game is basically cut.
Well, and that was the tough thing about Jamie Meter. He was one of the... He didn't even dress for the fourth preseason game. He was...
Which was shocking.
He was supposed to be on the team.
So what did you make of that? That's one of those things that seems to have flown under the radar because of Hard Knocks. Because we are focused on Orchard and Nassib and even Brogan Roback and some of those stories. But in terms of actual impact on the team and what they're going to do this season, Jamie Meter, he's a guy who actually has played.
Yeah, and was an excellent run defender, interior lineman.
Yeah, well, at least solid.
But you're right. But yeah, even in the Hard Knocks, when they were showing, was it Orchard or Nassib standing right next to him? Yeah. They didn't mention his name. They didn't put his name up on the screen. He could have been a janitor for all we knew on Hard Knocks.
And that just goes to show that this is just, as we said in the beginning, as many people said in the beginning, this is just a TV show.
Yeah.
It's not an actual thing. Because in terms, if they really wanted to tell the story of the 2018-19 Cleveland Browns, they would have spent a lot more time on Demarius Randall.
Yeah.
And Jabril Peppers. And
Denzel Ward.
Guys that we didn't get to know hardly at all.
Yeah.
Even Betonio, who made a couple cameos in the show, they didn't take us out of the building with Joel Betonio.
We
didn't.
Right.
He's basically, let's see, maybe the second or third best player, proven talent best player, maybe fourth. With Jarvis Landry, Demarius Randall, he's in the top five best players on the team.
Right.
And yeah, if you organize a side story.
If you organize the Browns' talent on Madden by overall ranking, he's four or five.
And if the show truly wanted to tell the story of the Cleveland Browns, it would focus on the top five guys
on the team. And the line shuffle.
Yes.
Being asked to move from left guard to left tackle in the middle of training camp. That's a huge story.
And now apparently an undrafted rookie might play left tackle this year or something?
I don't know.
I haven't even been following. I've been too focused on Hard Knocks.
Yes, exactly. All we know is Bob Wiley is going to encourage them to block like a rhinoceros, and they'll be fine.
And take flying lessons.
Yes.
Right? He was a pilot?
How did we not know that until the last episode?
He drives a white Maserati, and he knows how to fly a plane.
Yeah. I did like in his story about dating all the best-looking women in his high school, he said, well, first of all, I'm better looking than you are, which is awesome.
Yeah.
If I was the director of Hard Knocks, I wonder if, like, because, you know, they started a lot with Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
Then we found out he wasn't funny.
And they realized the RV wasn't going to land.
Right. Then we focused on Brogan Roback at the Butterfly House and realized he was a little bit insufferable. Yeah. And we had to wait until he flamed out at the end. And he didn't even flame out. He just numbersed out. And then you focus on Devin Kajust, who was, you know, a guy you were rooting for, but a guy you knew wasn't going to make the
team. He was never a threat to make the team.
But yeah, I would have rather spent more time with Myles Garrett, more than just the poetry, more time with David Njoku.
Oh God, the poetry. I forgot about that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up the poetry. More time with David Njoku. I liked the meditation stuff that he did. I would have loved to have done more stuff with Myles Garrett, David Njoku. I know Josh Gordon was kind of off limits.
And they were right to cover the battle between Nassib and Orchard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they just got unlucky that they both ended up losing the job.
No, for sure.
Because Nassib won that battle.
Yeah. He was the one who made the team until Saturday.
Yes. And who knows? Maybe the Browns made a mistake. We'll see what this Ravens dude does.
Right. Yeah. Is this our new Robert Turbin? You cut Terrell Pryor so you can sign Robert Turbin and have him never play. Sorry, I've been listening to old Friday Fumbles from that era, and that was a weird move.
Who thought Turbin's name was going to come up today?
I liked Christian Kirksey at the church.
Yep.
I liked the Christian Kirksey dancing while Todd Haley watches. That was a highlight of the series.
That was funny.
This episode, especially if you notice, if you want to go back and watch it again, look at Myles Garrett's face as well as he's standing there watching. And then I don't remember who tipped off the camera. Hey, look at Haley when Kirksey's dancing.
So, and this is the thing I want to discuss generically. Kirksey is proof that you can have good rhythm and still be a bad dancer.
Yes. Yes.
Because he's got rhythm. He's in time the drums. With the music.
Yep. He plays the drums. You can't do that without having good rhythm.
But those are some crazy moves.
Yes. That he's flopping around at that point. Yeah.
He looked like a Grateful Dead noodle dancer.
My daughter is
dancing to hip hop.
My daughter is one, and she's a better dancer than Christian Kirksey is.
I love the Grateful Dead noodle dancer.
Oh, yeah.
It's just one of my favorite things in the world. And apparently, it's entered the world of hip-hop. Because, you know, gigantic linebacking NFL players are noodle dancing to hip-hop now. All right. Is there anything else we need to talk about Hard Knocks? Because I do think we should probably at least discuss the Browns heading into the Steelers game a tiny bit.
Okay, I think Hard Knocks as a marketing tool has made, I think the fans are a little bit more on board with Hugh Jackson. As you said a couple weeks ago, he doesn't stutter, he doesn't fall over his words, he's an excellent speaker in the locker room, he's an excellent speaker in the meeting room. I think that's going to do well for him here. Because if anybody was on thin ice, it was the 1-32 guy.
Well, don't tell Bill Simmons, because he thinks that Hard Knocks has shown Hugh Jackson to be the utter disaster who proved 1-31.
Really?
And that he is deserving of his status as most likely to be first coach fired this year.
Oh, well, I don't really listen to Boston sports podcasts.
No, but it's funny. So. It's funny, because I agree with you.
To me, I was like, okay, I'm more on board with this guy.
I thought so, too. That's weird. Apparently he just looked stupid to them.
Okay, that's weird.
Maybe they came in with that pre-decided. It's certainly hard to look at that record.
Well, and they tried to formulate the thing in the first episode of him saying, well, from my chair, and I'm telling you what to do and all that. Guess what? That never came up the rest of the time.
No.
There was never any contention between anybody there.
And they seemed to work pretty well on the sidelines during their preseason games.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. What do I know?
Right.
It's all anecdotal evidence, of course, but
right.
Seems to me.
And I think Greg Williams seems a little less crazy, and whether it's the talent he's been given or what, the defense looks excellent.
Yes.
I don't know how much of that has to do with the defensive coordinator and how much has to do with having an excellent set of linebackers and defensive linemen and a revamped secondary, but they look excellent.
So let's talk about... let's talk about the Browns kind of heading into the season.
Yes.
Let's talk about Hugh Jackson first, though, because this is something we were... I don't know if you were in on that conversation in Slack behind the scenes at Waiting for Next Year. But all this talk about Hugh Jackson and the negativity and the focus on Hugh Jackson, I think people are falling for an okey-doke. Like, I think Hugh Jackson in the last 2 years being his own offensive coordinator and everything else, like, I think everybody realized that was a problem.
Yes.
And So you take Hugh Jackson, head coach, offensive coordinator, plus DeShone Kizer as your quarterback. And
plus,
in the next year, you flip it to Baker Mayfield, Tyrod Taylor, Todd Haley, and then push Hugh Jackson to just head coach.
Yeah.
It's the biggest year-over-year risk mitigation of a coach maybe in the history of the league.
No, and that's especially last year with Kizer. The plan was you brought in Osweiler. Your plan was he was going to win the job in the preseason.
Or you got Cody Kessler coming into year two.
Right. And it turns out both of them looked like crap. DeShone Kizer did look like the best option and probably was the best option. Now, where you screwed it up is you didn't give him anybody to talk to other than Hugh Jackson, who was too busy. Yes, there's a quarterback's coach, but if you noticed, and I said this before on this podcast, Todd Haley's around the quarterbacks all the time. Like, he's the guy that's talking to the quarterbacks all the time. So if you didn't have that guy and you didn't have a Drew Stanton or Tyrod Taylor type guy around, what do you expect to happen? He's got to just try to figure it out, and it's too much for a kid.
You had arguably the least experienced quarterback room in the history of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And a coach who never should have been allowed to be his own offensive coordinator.
Correct.
Which is something I defend Hugh, but that's something I said about him the minute he was hired that pissed me off / made me nervous.
Right.
Was that Jimmy Haslam ever allowed him, you know, I know that they're different guys, but going back to Pat Shurmur, I decided I was done with that model. I hate
Correct.
That model.
Correct.
I don't want to see it.
I am with you.
I think you're more likely to pull it off as a defensive coordinator, but even then, why? Let's just not do that.
Exactly.
Because Mike Pettine was his own defensive coordinator, was he not?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, I think he was.
But that was the one thing. You can say what you want about Sashi Brown and talent. Everyone could see that Hugh Jackson being his own offensive coordinator was a mistake. You're almost, and we'll see what Jimmy Haslam and John Dorsey think about this, you're almost in a first year of a new head coach.
Kind of.
Because now he's doing the job he was actually meant to do and supposed to do, and now, and we, back to our schlub jobs, we do this with people that are kind of on the bubble. We set them up so there are no excuses for underperformance.
Right.
And that is, this year, the Browns have talent. Much more than they did last year. Do they have Super Bowl talent? Who knows? But they have NFL talent now. He's not trying to be the offensive coordinator and the head coach. He's not trying to be the defensive coordinator and the head coach. He's not trying to be the only football adult in the room of a analytics guy who doesn't really know much about what he's doing. So you're not asking him to do anything but head coach. And if he goes 2-14, he will be and should be fired.
Yes.
And you've eliminated all those conversations of, well, he was trying to do this, or, well, you need to give him a chance with this, or, no, you need to give him a chance with this.
And maybe he won't need to be fired at 2-14 because they do have John Dorsey. They do have all these things in place. Like, I think there's a way for this group to continue and move forward. I mean, obviously, it's going to be hard to justify keeping anybody at 2-14, but this is finally the structure. It's not about giving Hugh Jackson a clean slate.
Right.
It's about saying, all right, this is finally set up the way it should have been set up to begin with. We have an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, a head coach, a GM with two really high-level assistants.
Yeah.
Elliot Wolf.
Who has to do all the hard work.
Was making all those phone calls.
Yikes.
He didn't seem to be sweating it, though.
No.
He had a script down.
Yeah, he did. I think the Browns defense, if they can stay healthy, has the capacity to be really, really good.
Yes.
And same thing with the offense. If they can stay healthy and the offensive line is the big question mark, if they can gel and become a good unit, I think you can have a pretty productive offense as well. So I'm a optimistic homer 1,000%, but I don't see why this can't be a good season.
So now that brings us to Steeler Week. The Steelers might or might not have Le'Veon Bell. They notoriously start slowly because they're a veteran team and they know that they have time. And generally speaking, they kind of take it easy in the
right,
the preseason,
right.
And they hit
they
their stride.
They go 2-3, and then all of a sudden end up 12-4, and yeah.
Right, exactly. So I actually think, you know, I would guarantee two things. The Browns have a really good chance on Sunday against the Steelers.
Yes.
And the Steelers will almost definitely have a better record at the end of the season than the Browns.
Sure, absolutely. But boy.
But they're not mutually exclusive. And I really think it's set up for both of those things to be true.
Yeah. And you are correct. Someone was saying, actually, it was Josh Gordon in his interview today said, well, at this point, even if Le'Veon Bell does play, I don't know how many people who can have a breakout performance if they haven't practiced all week.
Well, and even I think it was Mary Kay pointed out last year, Le'Veon Bell, his opening week was like 32 yards on 5 or 6 carries, something like that. He starts slow too. You know, and that's in a year where he hasn't been holding out the entire preseason, I think.
Yeah.
So
that's, yeah, it's kind of, I'm fine. The way our defense is set up, I'm fine with facing the best players that they have.
Yes.
I don't think it takes star players being out for our defense to be good enough to stop teams.
And they're not, you know, they don't even have to hold Antonio Brown under 100 yards.
No.
He's going to get some.
Yeah.
It's just, you got to keep it within reason. And if you're going to let him get some, you can't let anybody else get any.
Right. Right.
That's the idea. How many times did Josh Gordon go off in his big year, 2013, with the Browns, and then they lost anyway?
Yeah.
247 yards for Josh Gordon in a Browns loss.
Right.
You know?
To the Steelers.
So who cares?
Right.
You can win and still have the best player on the field go off a little bit against you.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The predictions in the NFL are silly.
I will tell you this.
Week one is probably the best time to make a prediction.
Referring back to Hard Knocks. The scene where they were cutting back and forth with putting the stripes on the helmet.
Yeah.
You got so used to seeing the orange helmets.
Yep.
Without the stripes that you're like, I'm 100% not feeling guilty for this. That scene where they were putting the stripes on the helmet, handing it to the guys, and they were going out on the field, Josh Gordon, Baker Mayfield, all those guys with the stripes on the helmet. I got goosebumps because it was over top of Hugh Jackson's speech about saying, and he said this in Detroit. It wasn't at the end here, but the one thing he said that I liked in Detroit is, we're the Cleveland Browns, and we're here to kick your fucking ass. That's
like
why
that
we're
too.
Here. And I think it's important to kind of take that back.
Well, let me say this. I thought the stripes thing was a little bit cheesy, but at least it was original.
Mm-hmm.
The Cleveland Browns, since Mike Pettine showed up, there was the play like a Brown, which he stole from the play like a Jet, which he stole from the play like a Raven.
I'm gonna bloody your nose.
And exactly. None of it was original. It felt like everybody, we were doing an impression of another city.
Right.
And that's never a good thing. This, regardless of how cheesy it might or might not be, was at least something specific to the Browns. Something that, you know, only the Browns can do, pretty much.
Yeah.
And if they decide to keep it going forward, that I'm totally fine with it. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be great if every preseason from now until the end of time,
peel them off.
No stripes on those helmets.
And just his speech at the end of, here's where the real work starts. I know, I know a bunch of guys who would love to be sitting in the chair you're sitting in. But
yep.
Now we're going to get to work and we're going to get ready to play Pittsburgh. And just that, the scene of the guys going out to practice with that, I wish we could keep going with the access, but apparently the HBO people need some time off.
Yes. Well, and that, let's not, we're not naive.
No.
But those kinds of speeches happen in every NFL locker room. It's not unique to the Browns, but this is our turn.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see our team
in the
hot seat. And I'd say overall it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did... in the end, kind of feel like I found out the Emperor has no clothes to a certain extent.
What do you mean as far as?
Well, the show, I thought I was going to learn a bunch.
Yeah,
And it was like, it was more like the Bob Costas get to know the athletes in the Olympics kind of a thing that really has no bearing on the outcome or the inner workings of the team.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there was never going to be any sort of X's and O's type stuff because they don't want that out there. I find it funny, and I don't, I've never played organized football enough to know they're all sitting down writing stuff down. They're all in meeting rooms, and they all have notebooks, and they're all writing stuff down. I have no idea what they're writing down, but they're sitting there with a playbook writing stuff down. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they were showing it in the quarterback room, the tight end room, the defensive room, like all these things. Like, let's sit here with a notebook and write some stuff down.
Yeah. Which is really funny because I don't – half the NFL isn't fooling the other team into what – they know what you're running.
Yeah, it's execution.
It's about lining up, doing the job better than the person across from you, mm-hmm. and executing. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
trick plays work every once in a while. You can beat the New Orleans Saints.
But you only have four or five gadget plays a year.
Exactly.
Remember, of course you remember, but when the Browns are so listless that everyone's going, why don't we ever run a reverse? Why don't we ever do a halfback pass? Why don't we da-da-da-da? And it's like, dude, if you're Pat Shurmur and you know your offensive line and you're receivers and Armon Smith at running back can't beat the person across from them.
Yeah, it's not going to work. Sorry.
You just, the coaches feel defeated as well.
Well, in the end, it comes down to whether, I don't know how many games we're going to win this season. It's almost impossible to predict, but we appear to be an NFL football team again.
Yes.
Last year, I would start to watch the games, and by about halftime, I was done, and I would turn it off, and I would go do something else. I think that's going to be harder to do this year, and that's a good thing for me. It's going to be, I think we're going to be an entertaining team that, not that you need moral victories and stuff like that, but as fans, we're allowed moral victories, frankly. And if we're competitive in every game and we win a handful of them, I will be happy that my team is fighting. When it's clear and brazen ineptitude like it was last year that spits in the face of fans and...
It's insulting.
You know that this
shit's
team,
contagious.
That shit's contagious, bruh. You know that they're trying this year. And I'm not saying individual players weren't trying last year. The organization is damn well trying this year. And that, when it's real, will earn my kind of respect and stuff like that. When it was last year, when you're like, this is not going to work.
We're back, baby.
Yep.
I think the Browns are the 25th best team in the league. We are back.
We're going to climb up those power rankings.
Yeah. Man. When was the last time the Browns were above, like, 20?
2007.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, well, that's going to do it.
Now, one last thing. I did see both Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter.
Schefty?
Yes. They both said that this was one of the best seasons of Hard Knocks in recent memory. I don't know why. Again, you and I, we loved the first episode. Second episode started. Maybe it's just because the novelty was wearing off. I did, though, throughout this episode, kept looking at the clock going, how much is left? How much is left? Oh, I wish there was more left. But
well, and I do remember watching previous seasons of the show, to your point from earlier, when it's about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know who they cut.
Right.
Or even if I did, like, I didn't really pay much attention.
Right.
Or I was invested in seeing them cut. I didn't feel particularly invested in watching Devin Cajuste get cut, though, for some reason.
Well, I'm going to give...
And you know what? I'm going to give the Browns credit. I think it's because they actually handled their business well and the guys were all professional about it.
No, they did, yeah. There wasn't some weird outburst that got caught on film that...
None of Hugh Jackson's handshake hugs seemed out of place.
No.
Everybody seemed to want them.
I know we're trying to end here.
Yes.
Was there... Do you think there were anybody that he cut? He told Cajuste and Roback, keep chasing your dream. You can play in this league. Mm-hmm. Was there anybody that he went, listen, man, maybe you should find another job because this is not going to work for you. Does he say that to everybody or does he tell people, hey, listen, this isn't maybe, you know, I know you loved playing in college, but maybe it's time you got yourself a real estate license.
That'd be a really good side project. Let's decide which Browns cuts over the years were guys that they were like, no, man, this just isn't going to happen for you.
And you noticed the
who's the fourth round receiver they took last year and then cut?
I don't even remember. Yeah, I'm trying to forget.
Exactly.
The, I will say this. You could tell between Kajust and Brogan Roback, he had the keep chasing your dream speech.
Yes.
And then with Nate Orchard and Carl Nassib, it was the, you're going to be on waivers. This team might claim you. This team might claim
you. They've never been cut before.
Well, they've never been cut before, and they have a possibility of being picked up. Mm. He didn't give any false hope to Kajust. It was, we'll keep working, and see they'll see what you're doing. And Roback was, keep working, and somebody will see what you're doing. And for them it is, somebody's going to pick you up. Here's how you land on your feet, and you're just going to have to move.
Well, and let's be honest. Brogan Roback very well could become one of those $3 to $7 million a year backup quarterbacks. The 2.5 on the depth chart.
The quarter of the league that is former Browns quarterbacks as backups in the NFL.
He'll probably never be as good a backup as Colt McCoy.
Colt McCoy is the best backup there ever was.
And what a career.
Yeah.
Like, who's complaining about that? He's probably made somewhere between $6 and $10 million a year. For the whole career, he's only had to play in, like, 17 games. Yeah. It's like...
He's the Jim Sorge of our generation.
Peyton Manning's backup was the best job in the world for how many years?
Yeah.
All right, we got to go.
I'm going to plug one more thing. Okay. Friday Fumble coming back this Friday as we discuss Pittsburgh football. And we pretty much are going to tell you that the Friday Fumble has taken you on an inside look at the Browns office for years. And then Hard Knocks comes and steals our thunder? We don't think so.
All right, with that, it's been the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. Dave, it's been a lot of fun. I hope we can do it again. Even though it's a podcast, let's shake hands, make it official.
Here, let's do it near the mic. Okay.
Yeah, there we go. We got a podcast more, so let's keep it up throughout the season.
Thanks
so much for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. It's been the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast.
The Korean War has sadly been known as the Forgotten War, but half a century earlier, the United States was locked in a bloody conflict in Asia that's been all but erased from the history books. Hi, I'm Alex Hastie, the host of Ohio versus the World, an American history podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. In our newest episode, we speak to experts about the Philippine-American War, America's first Asian counterinsurgency conflict. The heroes, the villains. We'll discuss President McKinley, Admiral Dewey, the vicious brutality of the fighting, and the scandals and war crimes that nearly sunk Theodore Roosevelt's presidency. Check out our show, Ohio versus the World, on the Evergreen Podcast Network for our new episode about America's most forgotten war. Now back to the show.